Hello and welcome to the Jake and Gino Show. My name is Gino Barber and I'm one of the co-founders of Jake and Gino. And on today's show, we have Pollock and Nitty. They're the co-founders of Open Space Capital and Open Spaces Women and have a passion for empowering other investors to pursue entrepreneurship through real estate investing. In their new book, Accelerate Your Real Estate, published by Bigger Pockets, they share their framework, a spin on the BRRR, known as the BRRR strategy, that will help readers develop their portfolio so it can thrive without constant attention. Without further ado, welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you so much, Gina, for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us. Excited to be here.
And listen, we were talking earlier on before we started recording, and I asked you a question. I really want you to share with the audience why write the book. It's a labor of love. You guys spend thousands of dollars, years of your life, throwing out copies in the garbage, getting editors. What was the real reason you wrote the book? What did you want to accomplish with this book?
So we scaled our portfolio very fast. And people asked us all the time, how did you do it? And we said, oh, we used the BRRRR strategy, but we scaled it using systems, processes, and teams, using this framework that we've developed. And everybody asked us, like, what do you mean? What's that? What does that mean? And it was so hard to communicate all of the systems and processes that we used in a very short time. So we said, eventually we said, all right, we need to write a book so we can communicate this because there's so much that goes into it. And we want to help people get access to that.
So whose idea was it? Because in our family, my wife's got the idea. And then she goes, Gino, I've got this idea. And every time I hear that, I'm like, uh-oh, here comes a lot more work for me. So you're the idea guy and she's the executor. Is that how it goes? Okay.
It was his idea. And he also took the lead on execution.
Yeah. Yeah. But it usually is that way, Gino, when I get to hear the same thing where I come up with ideas and she's like, why don't you implement it this time? I'm like, all right, fine.
A lot of times I will say I have ideas and then this is a new rule that we've come up with. I have ideas and then sometimes we'll disagree on it and I'll say, oh, I'm still going to do it. And then he backs me up anyway. And then a year later or something, I'll say, oh, I should have listened to you. So now we've decided that we can only implement an idea if both of us are truly on board. Learn that the hard way.
Listen, with all kidding aside, I think one of the best things that I've done in my life is be able to work with my wife, to work with your spouse. And there's a lot of trials, a lot of tribulations. It's very difficult. But name one thing in life that you've really accomplished, that you really enjoy, that isn't hard and it isn't difficult. And I love coming home at the dinner table talking about business. We do a podcast together, sharing ideas and sharing an important part of my day. Work is important to me because I have to feed the family, but it's also empowering. It also gives me purpose. And to be able to share that purpose with your significant other is powerful. Did you guys start out working together, or let me get the backstory of why real estate and how you guys came together, started investing?
Yeah, sure. So we actually were in corporate for a long, long time, right? So we took the traditional path of going to college, getting a 9-to-5 job, getting a steady paycheck, and we were in that for 15 plus years. And then we realized at some point that if we kept working for another 20 years, we were not going to be financially free. And we had really young kids at the time, like a 2-year-old and a 2-month-old, and we barely got any time to spend with them. And we said, okay, something needs to change. And, you know, what can we do to do that? And we realized, and I was listening to a lot of podcasts at the time and reading books. And Warren Buffett said this, where sometimes it's not about how hard you row the boat, but it's about what boat you're in. And we realized that maybe in corporate, we were in the wrong boat and we just kept trying harder and making all these sacrifices, but we were never going to get there until 60, where, you know, we didn't want to wait that long. So that's when we found real estate and we thought, okay, this sounds, and we both loved real estate anyway. So we're like, oh, why don't we try this? And we got started with a couple of rent-ready rentals and we're like, oh, we actually like this and this builds wealth. And that's how we sort of got started with real estate.
And what did your family think about it? When you mentioned it to them, what was their initial reaction?
It was skepticism, right? And it is, and I think that goes for a lot of people that are trying to get either started in real estate or entrepreneurship. Anyone because people generally talk to people who have not done something before, and anyone who hasn't done it before will say, oh, that's so difficult to do. Don't do that. Like, that's, you know, I've heard all these horror stories about, you know, people, tenants not paying and all this stuff. And but it's really, it's important where you take your advice from. So we're like, all right, we're just going to keep going, even though people are, and people even told us, oh, you haven't done any business before. What do you know about business? And those are all skills that can be acquired, right?
And how did you guys start working together? Did you just decide, hey, we're gonna do this together? Or how did it look early on? Did you quit your jobs early on, or did you continue to work and then at some point you left your jobs?
So we had a two-year-old, and I just had a baby, our second one. And we had a couple of rent-ready rentals. And once you taste that cash flow and you realize that, it's work. I'm not going to say real estate doesn't take work. It does take work. But once you have a stabilized rental property, it takes very little time to manage it and have that cash flow, provide a good place to live for someone, make an impact. So when we had our second child, I was on maternity leave, and I just did not want to go back because I kept asking our company for flexibility because we had two small children. We're immigrants. We had the village that people talk about, like it takes a village to raise children. We didn't have that. And so I kept asking my company for flexibility. And I thought, you know, after putting all that time in a company, you would think that they would be more open to it because you have a reputation. They know you do good work, but they were not open to it. And I just got really resentful. Plus, seeing how there was a way to make money without spending all my time on a factory floor. I was working in a factory. I really wanted to do something about that. So I asked him if he would be open to becoming a single income family. And it was tough because I had worked really hard to get there. You know, my mom was a single mom. She raised me. She, you know, worked really hard to put me through school and everything. So it was a tough choice because I didn't know when I quit my job if we were going to make it. So it was a tough decision. And then also, I feel like we place so much of our self-worth on what we do that it's kind of like an identity crisis if you just quit your job and decide to build something until you succeed. So it was hard. Yeah. But what we made it happen, and then started scaling this portfolio. And a few years later, he was able to quit his job.
So I want to hear from Pollock, because I'm sure that conversation didn't go as smoothly as you said it was, because he must have said, you ain't leaving your job. What are you, nuts? You worked all these years and now you're going to leave? When did you have the realization that your wife was onto something and it really made sense for her to leave? And because I think you said the identity. We have six children. So to me, I think the mother and family is the most important thing. I think there's identity first to God, as we're God's children. But then after that, as women, you're mothers. I mean, this is something that me and Pollock, we cannot identify to. We can't nurture. I don't care what anybody says. I cannot feel what my wife does. And her job is of the utmost importance. So if you're leaving that and you're saying, hey, I want to leave that, but then I ultimately want to work with my husband, to me, that's such a high calling. But what were your thoughts, honestly, initially, yeah, when she said that? There's got to be a lot of fear, right? Because yes, fear of the unknown. All of a sudden, you're going from X to Z, and like, I'm making less, and I have to sacrifice, and all of a sudden, I'm the burden. And if I lose my job and sleepless nights, how did that go over with you? What did you think of? What were your thoughts?
It was funny because when Pollock came and told me that, I was like, I'm a risk taker, Gina. Like, I love taking risks, okay? So I was like, okay, I see where you're going with this. Are you sure you want to do this? Because I know that like, her identity was so tied to everything she'd accomplished in her life, as is for everyone. I said, are you sure about this? And then she thought about this for like a few weeks. And I said, okay, if you're that sure, then let's do it. But then you don't have to sacrifice the other side of the need that you have to achieve something, or the need that you have to give back to society. You can still do that. And I think that's the realization that we had early on, is that she can still quit her job and still build a portfolio. And I said, look, if you want to do that, I'm going to be there to support you, because at the end of the day, it's a risk. And it's a lot easier to take that risk if both of us are on board and are on the same page. So we're like, all right, if you're doing this, let's do this together.
And I must say that's actually that moment, I think, really redefined our relationship, because I didn't know if I could actually do it. I proposed this idea, but I wasn't 100% sure that I could jump in and actually do it. But him backing me up really made a huge difference in that decision, and also in what our relationship was about. Because, you know, early on in your marriage, you know, first 7, 10 years, you're still learning about each other. You're still defining what life you're going to build together. And something like this becomes what defines your relationship moving forward.
Mm-hmm. This is important, because it is a real estate show, but we're talking about relationships right now, because relationships are important. That's why we get into real estate, because relationships are important. But I have news for anybody listening to this right now. What's the worst thing that could have happened? If Nitty came and she completely got destroyed and lost money, she could always go back and get a job again.
Right.
We're so afraid. Take the risk. Take the opportunity that is offered to you. I had a restaurant. I left the restaurant to go into real estate full time with Jake back in 2016. If I had done really poorly, I could always go back and become a cook or open up another little pizzeria. I think we get so lost and we're so afraid, and then all of a sudden everything seems so negative. Take a step back, especially if you have a supportive spouse, which is great. Take the risk. Take the opportunity. Obviously, I'm sure you both planned pretty well. I'm sure you both had some reserves. I'm sure you had a lot of things going on. You didn't just burn the boats or burn the bridges. You were very systematic about it. You're very thoughtful about it, and you had communicated really well. But if that all doesn't work out, it's okay. You can go back to your job. But think of all the stuff that you would not have had, the both of you right now, if you had not taken that opportunity. Isn't it amazing to just look at it from that perspective? I think that will change everything for anybody listening saying, I don't know if I want to leave. There's too much risk. I think there's too much risk not to leave, because then you don't know what your life is going to look like 5 years from now.
That's right. What's the worst that can happen, right? Like, she'll just get another job, or we'll figure it out. We're in this together. We'll figure it out. But as you said, like, the risk is as much in the opportunity cost of not doing something, and we'll be still in the same position 10 years from now if we hadn't taken that risk, and we'd be kicking ourselves that we should have done it sooner.
I love this question that you shared with me. You know, these high earners, that paradox. Why are high earners? Because there's a lot of doctors listening to this show, a lot of engineers, a lot of seven-figure net worth, you know, earners out there living paycheck to paycheck. Why does that salary keep them from building wealth?
You know, it is so interesting. Like, we've thought about this a lot ever since we were like high earners and we were trying to create wealth for ourselves. I think it's what society instills in us since we were young, which is that you need to sacrifice everything that you have, and you need to put every waking minute and all your efforts into building income. And no one tells us that it's important to build wealth. When it comes to building wealth, people read like a couple of books and they listen to a couple of podcasts, but they never take action. Or maybe they try to learn a skill and they give up because they're not ready to make the same sacrifices to be able to build wealth that they've done for income. Like, people want instant gratification, instant success. People work on it for 3 months or 6 months. They're like, why do I not have wealth already? Well, but think about how long it took you to create income of where you are today. You went to school, you spent 10, 15 years working, sacrificing, and that's what got you to the 100, 200, 300K or whatever plus that you make a year today. So why not? And wealth building takes a fraction of the time and fraction of the work, but because society has instilled in us that income is everything, but, you know, wealth is not. That's why we're all just so focused on income.
So let me follow up that, and Nitty, you can ask this. Why has society done that? Why have they given us the golden handcuffs of income, but not really taught us wealth? What are your thoughts or your theories on that?
You know, I think it's interesting, because in a way, for society to function, society needs workers, right? So people need to hire somebody that they can get to do a job, especially people in power and people who are these corporations. And for them, it's best to, I mean, going back to the industrial revolution, right? Like the school, if you look at the schools and what we learn in school has been the same and hasn't changed for hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. It's because we're just creating people who can go in a company and take up a job. That's what everything, even if you go to business school, that's all you learn. They don't teach you how to, you know, start a company necessarily. Most MBA programs will teach you how to work in a large multi, billion dollar corporation as a manager, mm-hmm. right? And so it's just, I don't know, again, what the design or why it is that way, but it needs to change. And it's a huge mindset shift. It is a huge mindset shift, but it needs to happen.
So what are your thoughts on that high income earner as people are earning more money?
I think that there is some things that you only learn in the process of building wealth and being wealthy. And because our parents don't know that, it's very hard to pass on that information to us. We come from a family of workers, like you said, of employees. Who was going to teach us this? They don't teach any of this in schools, right? How are we supposed to learn this? I think it's just easier to follow the traditional path because that's all we know. I really think that's what it is. And once you understand how money works and how finances work and how building wealth works, then it's very hard to go back after that point.
Yeah, it is. And I to follow up to what you guys are saying, that instant gratification really means a lot. The problem when you're a high income earner is you think you deserve to start spending more money on what you're making, right? So if you're making $100,000, all of a sudden your lifestyle tends to go up and you're looking at what everyone else is. And it's very difficult nowadays with Instagram, with social media, a lot more difficult than 30 years ago. And it's a lot more easier to spend money nowadays than it was years ago. So part of building wealth is really reinvesting a lot of the capital that you earn. And that's very difficult nowadays because there's so much temptation out there. It's so easy to spend money nowadays. And I think we get caught up in that. And building wealth is just taking time. It shouldn't be very exciting. Just reinvesting your money. And it sounds really easy and it's simple, but it isn't easy because you just have to adopt certain habits that you guys are talking about right now.
That's right. And Gino, can I add one more thing to that?
Absolutely.
I think, if you think back, jobs maybe worked 30, 40, 50 years back where a single income family, you could still afford a house, you could still afford a car, and money went a lot farther than it did today. Mm-hmm. I think it's getting so much harder, like even with two jobs, and so many people do multiple jobs, and it's still hard to meet your basic needs, forget like owning a nice house or a car. And so this framework of getting a job and progressing in your career is not the solution that it used to be anymore. It's getting harder and harder.
I love that. Let's dive into the frameworks. You've got a couple of frameworks in the book. You want to go through the ABLE framework first?
Sure.
So ABLE framework, we developed it because whenever we were starting something new or we were pivoting, it was very tough to make a decision on how to go about it and how to take action. And so we put this framework together to make that decision-making faster. So if you're, say you're just starting out, the way I would look at it is I would say, okay, what's the avatar? What's the specs? The A stands for avatar. What is that I'm after? And a lot of people call it the buy box. People call it the property specs. It's the same thing. What is the avatar of the property that you're after? What is the asset class? Where are you going to invest? How can you simplify it to the point where you know exactly what you're going after? And, you know, you can use, I recommend using 3S framework for this. Hey, pick something when you're just starting out. Pick something that is small, which requires the least amount of risk in the first go. And you can always make it riskier over time, right? But your first deal, make it as simple as possible, as small as possible, and as scalable as possible. Something where if you learn something, you can reuse it again for the next deal. People always look for that needle in the haystack deal for their very first deal, and it takes so long for them to take action because they see people who have experience talk about their deals, and they think that that should be what their first deal looks like. And I always say, for the first deal, don't try to look for a needle in the haystack. Think about what the avatar is of the property and keep it small, simple, and scalable. The second letter, B, stands for blinders. And when investors come into real estate investing, any strategy, it's going to be an uphill battle in the beginning. And people give up right when it's about to get easier because it got hard. And what they don't understand is when you look at somebody doing something else, a different strategy, it may look simpler, but when you get deeper into it, it's going to have the same uphill battle in the beginning, right? You have to make mindset shifts. You have to acquire new skills. You have to put your systems and processes, build that business. So put your blinders on. L stands for leap of faith. And at some point, I feel like especially people who come from professions like me that inherently attract a lot of people are conservative with money and numbers. Like I was an engineer. It's just natural for me to be extra conservative, extra risk averse with my numbers, with, you know, taking that step, a leap of faith. At some point, you just have to take a leap of faith and be like, listen, I did as much research as I could. No matter how much more I study and research, at some point, I'm just going to have to accept that investing has some unknowns associated with it and some things I'm only going to learn if I take action. Mm-hmm. And the last letter, E, stands for expectations. And I feel like a lot of people, they get up to this point, you take that leap of faith, but then if you fail the first time, you feel like this is simply not going to work. It's not like that. You have to manage your expectations and know that there's going to be peaks and valleys, ups and downs. It's a game of snakes and ladders. Sometimes you step on a snake and that's okay. You manage your expectations and go in it knowing that it's going to be a mix of ups and downs, and knowing that allows you to take action, continue having that momentum even where there is highs and lows. So Abel, avatar, blinders, leap of faith, and expectations.
I love that. I was watching Chris Voss's masterclass this past weekend. I was on a plane coming back from Italy, and one of his quotes that I love it, he said, awkwardness is an indication of learning. Mm. And if you can't be awkward and you always have to be right and you can't be uncomfortable, you will never learn a skill. And what you're saying here, the blinders, is that shiny object syndrome. Please just pick one niche. I'm not going to tell you that multifamily is the best. I personally think it is because I've been doing it for a dozen years. I love it's a basic human need. There's a lot of really good points. But if you like self-storage, or you like mobile home parks, or you like single family fix and flips, whatever that may be, put the blinders on. And the avatar, your buy box, have a buy right criteria for that as well. Select the market, do everything. The framework is pretty simple, like I told you, but sometimes it's very difficult to follow that because you might not take that leap of faith, but that's why having partners, having significant others, you have that accountability. Joining a community, very important to do that as well. It's really, really important. But the ABLE framework, if you guys follow that framework, pick the niche. Pick one and stick with it. Yes. And it will not happen overnight. I mean, you go to college for 4 years, like you guys had said. Could you imagine if I tell you, if you do this for the next 12 months, you'll have a deal. And then within the next 24 months, you may have three deals. And within 5 years, you may have enough income to replace your lifestyle with real estate. And if I told you that, would you sign on to it? Almost everyone would say yes. But then when it comes down to it, wow, there's a lot of work. The expectations aren't there. What we think we can do in 1 year, we really overestimate. What we can do in five, we vastly underestimate it. So it's important that you follow that framework. Let's talk about the scale strategy here. I think that's an important one as well. I mean, as I'm going through the book, it's a long book. It's a really great book on a lot of different techniques, strategies, your story. What's the scale strategy?
So the scale framework is essentially a blueprint, right? So when we first started doing the BRRRR strategy, where we take anything from, like, say, a single family, duplex, triplex, quadplex, you buy a distressed property, you rehab it, you rent it, and you refinance to pull the cash out. And it's a buy and hold, long-term buy and hold strategy, right? So you get access to all the key benefits that you get with anything that you hold for long-term, which is cash flow, appreciation, The forced appreciation that you do with Burr, and then tax benefits, and also the debt pay down, right? So you get all these benefits with it. When we first started executing that strategy, we ran into a lot of challenges, which is, wait, how do we, you know, finance this thing? Because we didn't have a lot of capital when we started. We had like maybe $20,000-$25,000. And that too, not in cash, that was in like either a 401k, and we had to like cobble it together. And so we said, how do you scale if you had so much, such limited capital? And we were both had busy jobs and little kids. So he said, how do you scale it if you have very limited time? And so, and the third thing that I would add to that is we wanted to scale fast. We didn't want to wait 10 years or 20 years. We wanted to do it in 3 to 5 years. So that's when we came up with the scale framework, which is essentially a blueprint of how to execute the Burr strategy, right? And how you basically do it in a way that allows you to build wealth fast, but do it using systems and processes and teams. So the SCALE is an acronym, and it fits with in line with the Burr strategy. So S, which is would be a buy, is scalable acquisitions and deal analysis. C stands for construction without the DIY. Mm-hmm. A in SCALE stands for adding cash flow. In a way that maximizes the cash flow and the things that we do there. L is for leverage and commercial financing, which is one of the most important things, important skills you can learn as an investor, which is commercial financing and leveraging correctly. And then E in scale is exponential growth, which again, using the systems and processes and teams along the way, you scale pretty fast.
Excellent. Let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsors.
Jake and Gino's Multifamily Mastery 6 is coming to the Gaylord Palms in Orlando, Florida this October 14th and 15th. Join Jake and Gino as they welcome special guests like Chris Voss, Luke Wren, David Green, and many more. Discover Jake and Gino's three-step framework for real estate success, enabling students to accumulate $4 billion in assets. MM6 is the multifamily event of 2023 that you do not want to miss. Go to jakeandgino.com/MM6 to reserve your tickets today.
And we're back. I think you guys have probably worked a lot on your mindset. And I think most people, when they get into real estate, all they think, hey, I'm going to buy a couple of deals. I don't really see this as a business. I just want to get a little cash flow. What was the mindset that you guys needed to adopt to start investing in real estate and start ultimately scaling and leaving your jobs?
I think mindset-wise, a big change for us was kind of knowing that wealth building happens over time. And this is not just a lesson we learned once. We need to keep reminding ourselves of it. As an investor, when the market changes, one of the things that you keep telling yourself is, you know, that it's not about timing the market. It's about time in the market, right? And that's what long-term buy and hold real estate does for you. And that's what really attracted us. And it really, I mean, it worked for us. We were able to build a portfolio in about 4.5 years in both quitter jobs. And I think that was a big sort of shift for us to understand that the reason, you know, the rich and the wealthy can be rich and wealthy is because they have assets. And those assets is what gives you the income that you then use to buy more assets, and that gives you even more income. And that's the way to truly be wealthy and be free.
And I think as employees, we are so transactional. And so we're consumers when we're employees. You go to work, you come back, you figure out how you're going to spend that money, how you're going to balance, you know, all of the expenses that you have and what's left over. And maybe you save a little bit, right? So as employees, we're transactional and we're consumers. But then when you go into real estate investing and building wealth, you really have to step out of that and think of yourself as an investor, investment of your time, investment of your energy, investment of your money, and building assets, which is not just the cash flowing assets we're talking about, but also yourself as an asset, right? Building yourself up. What do you need to do to be that person that's going to create wealth? And these were some of the shifts we hadn't, you don't think about any of this as an employee. And in some ways, I feel like necessity is the mother of invention. And when we started investing, we, you know, I was full-time real estate, but also with two kids with me full-time. So we had to find ways to scale a portfolio without me physically being everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of just gave birth to different ways. We had to find different ways of doing this because he still had his full-time job. We would work on this together nights and evenings and weekends and things like that, but had to find ways to make it happen. And the only way to really do it was to build it like a business. That's the only way to scale something without physically being present at all times.
There's so many places I can go with the next question. I'm just trying to formulate something because you've said so many things to me. First thing is, when you're beginners, you see all the opportunities. I want anyone on here who thinks they're an expert, all of a sudden things are not, I can't invest outside the market. I can't go into multifamily. There's a lot of things that beginners see and try is when we become experts, and the experts over the last 3-4 years have been completely wrong about everything, from inflation to market to interest rates. I mean, they've been wrong about everything. So if you can adopt that beginner's mindset, I think it's truly important. And as you're learning, and then one other thing that you said about consumers, I think the thing that MJ DeMarco really impressed upon me, he's the Millionaire Fastlane. He says that people who truly make wealth are producers. You guys are producing right now because you're creating jobs, you're producing great quality assets. People are trained to be consumers. Be a producer and then allow your production for your consumption. It's the other way around. We become slaves because our consumption overtakes anything else. And we're always thinking about buying the next car or buying the next home or going out and going to Nordstrom and spending money when we should really be thinking about investing that money and letting the production. And it is backwards. And I always say to myself, why were we taught that way? Because it's a lot easier to control people who have a lot of debt. We control people who have that mindset of worrying about always their next purchase. I'm thinking about my next deal. That's what I'm always thinking about. I'm thinking about investing the money that I have. I'm not worried about cars. The cars is temporary. And I think if we can at least adopt to people to have a little bit of a producer mindset, in the beginning, it may be uncomfortable because we're used to seeing that money in the bank. And I don't want to lose that money because that money is safety and security, when in reality, it really is not safety and security because you're losing so much purchasing power in that money in the next 5 years. But you have to be, you know, you have to be what you guys are doing, have these frameworks and get educated. Where did you guys start getting educated? I mean, you're working W-2, you have this mindset shift. Where did you guys jump in? Where can somebody listening to this right now, they're starting out, they're overwhelmed. There's so much information out there. What did you guys do when you started out?
So we listened to every podcast we could get our hands on, every podcast, every book, and about real estate, about wealth creation. And we listened to that for about a few months and we consumed a lot of content around, okay, what is the right strategy for us? And I think one thing that really helped us was we knew we had to get out of that mode, because sometimes once you get into education mode, like people, like you can get into this like endless loop of just consuming more and more content. Be like, yeah, that sounds really good. Oh, that sounds really good. And it's the shiny object thing. And so really making a decision at some point to say, all right, this is the one strategy that I'm going to pick, and then truly mastering it. But it's okay to start with books and podcasts when you just want a lot of information about different strategies. But if you want to go really, truly deep into one topic, one podcast or one book is not going to do it. You need to spend like years doing it. You need to be in a community that's helpful and shows you the way. You need guidance along the way to see where you're going. So use that to start, but then pick something and then go deep.
I should have asked you guys this question sooner. I don't know why I didn't, but how has this changed your life? Talk about the last few years since you've left your job and the struggles that you had and how your life is today, how real estate has made your life different.
It's different in so many ways, right? I mean, I think one, the biggest impact, the biggest goal that we had was that we could spend more time with our family and with our kids. And that has been amazing. So we still work a lot. And one of the things that people think is like, oh, once you get to a point, why don't you just stop working? It's like, no, the whole idea is that we don't mind working. We actually love working and love growing and love building something, but we wanted to do it on our own terms. So the biggest thing that has happened is we have the flexibility to say, all right, you know, this week we're just going to spend time with the kids, or we're just going to take a trip somewhere and we'll work from wherever we are. We don't have to ask our boss if we can do that.
We just got back from Portugal and we were working there, but we could have not worked at all, and that would have been fine too. But we enjoyed working, so we worked while we were there a little bit, and it's been pretty amazing to and empowering to know that you have you can kind of decide how you spend your time. That can be quite disorienting at first because you don't, there's so many things you can do with your time. But we've reached a good balance now where we know how we want to take this gift of time that we have and turn it into, like you said, producing more.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys mind if I sum up your entire, what you said there in one word? Do you mind if I do that for you?
Please.
I think the word that comes to my mind all the time, because I've been reading The Psychology of Money, I've read it over and over, it's autonomy. Mm-hmm. You guys have autonomy over your life. It's you guys can make decisions when you want to, where you want to. And when you become successful, it's not about chasing money. You're chasing opportunity right now. And you want to work because you've gotten really good at something. Why would you quit something because you got good at it and like, I'm going to go sit on the beach? Yes. Sitting on the beach for high performers gets to be boring after a while. That's not what the goal is. The goal is to really become really good at something, not worry about the money because the money will come in, and just continue to do it because you love to do it and continue to get better there. And then all of a sudden, you guys write the book, Accelerate Your Real Estate, and you're giving back and you're creating even more impact. That's what the goal is, everybody. I don't think the goal is to get money and to retire. I think really it ultimately comes down to the autonomy of your time and, you know, the financial freedom. Everyone says, I want financial freedom. Well, figure out what the financial freedom for you is. For me, simply was just to be able to pay my kids' dental bills and to be able to go on vacation and not worry about the stress of where am I going to get the money from. That's what my financial freedom was. It wasn't about buying things. I think once you understand that and then you couple that with happiness truly comes from autonomy, because I was watching you, Palak. When I answered the question, you smiled. When I asked you how to like, I could see that it truly impacted your life. And it was like, okay, it's not about the money. It's about the trip to Portugal. It's not about the jewelry. It's not about the cars. It's about spending more time with my family. It's about writing a book for bigger pockets. It's about having fun and getting really good and being awkward every day because I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm getting better. That's what real estate and building a business and scaling a business will allow you to do. I think that's more than one word. I said it was going to be one word, but I mean, sometimes I get a little carried away, but it's true though. I think, you know, when you don't know what you don't know, I always thought the same thing. When I get financially free and I have more income than expenses, I'm just going to chill out and hang out. And most people who have reached that pinnacle in their life is like, well, I've just scratched the surface. That's just the tip of the iceberg. So I don't know if you guys want to answer, you know, add anything to that.
I mean, I absolutely love how you summarize that. You know, one other thing that is really something that we've cherished a lot since we started doing this is we've made a kids a part of this, right? So the kids are part of our investing journey and our business, and we get to teach them things. And even though like they're really young, they're absorbing all these things about how we think about investments, how we think about businesses, how we think of, and some things that we never had access to when we were growing up. And I'm so glad that we can pass on these things. I mean, that's a huge, huge thing that they're not going to learn from anywhere else.
And we're breaking generational cycles, and they are not just generational cycles about money. They're about so many other things, because having that time gives you the freedom to work on yourself as a parent, as a husband or a wife, as a member of society. It allows you to make so much impact, and having that is such a big blessing. I mean, it's hard to summarize that in words even.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Listen, I could speak to you guys for the next 6 hours. And I think the listeners are like, hey guys, but I want them to buy the book. So where can they get a hold of you? Any websites where they can get a copy of the book as well?
Yeah, so they can get a 10% off coupon on our website at openspaceswomen.com/book. There's a 10% off coupon, and then buy it from Bigger Pockets. Or search for it anywhere you buy your books.
Or Amazon.
Amazon, yeah.
It's the name of the book is
Accelerate Your Real Estate.
Before I let you guys go, I need to recap the show for the listeners, because I know there's some people out there that may be listening to this and may be saying to themselves, well, Palak and Nitty can do it. Jake and Gino can do it, but I can't do it. And I'm here to tell you, this is a pizza guy right now. My drug rep buddy's not here on the show right now, but he'll tell you, and you have two former corporate W-2 workers who thought they couldn't do it in the beginning. They found their why. They found the reason, and they did a methodical, slow way to get into the business. They actually sat down and had a conversation amongst themselves of how do we do this? And then they went and they got to work. They must have felt awkward for the last 5 or 6 years learning this and continuing to hone their craft, continuing to buy a deal, continuing to reinvest. And was it easy? Absolutely not. But was it worth it? It's always nice to go to Portugal and to be able to say, hey, I may want to work and I may not want to. But what's even more powerful is she did work and she enjoyed the work. And that's what life's all about, is about creating impact. But for me, becoming financially free is just for yourself. But once you become financially free, you're able to help others and to include your spouse and to include your kids in that journey. There is nothing better in life to be able to do that and to be able to teach the next generation to get out of that mindset of I have to go work for someone else when I can create my own wealth and begin to build my wealth one step at a time. I just want to thank you both for being on the show. It's been an honor and a privilege, and accelerate your real estate. Go buy it at Bigger Pockets. Go buy it at Amazon. Thanks, guys, for being on the show. I really appreciate it today.
Thank you for having us. This was so much fun.
Yeah, we really enjoyed it. Thank you.